Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we will hear from Ken Knight from Canticum Novum, and we'll hear about the Arcos Dance Company, and of course, Rob DeWalt will be with us speaking of the arts. I'd like now to welcome to the program Ed and Michael Lobaugh. They are the owners of the Old Windmill Dairy, an award-winning dairy in McIntosh, New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You left, what, an urban corporate life, both of you, and decided to go back to the land?
Yes. I had worked for Marriott International for about 16 years. Kind of wanted to do something different, get back to the land, kind of feel like I was doing something more to help community and kind of make it more local. I had come up with several different ideas of what I wanted to do, and in talking with Ed, we kind of figured out that making cheese is probably the best thing that we could have done out of all my crazy ideas I had.
And goat cheese, no less.
Yes, goat cheese.
How did you decide to start working with goats?
Actually, Ed's grandparents had a small goat farm in 29 Palms, and he had, growing up as a kid, had spent some time out there and had gotten some experience in watching, you know, his grandparents, you know, with the herd and the cheese making and the milk process and all that.
And so. Michael, you love goats, so yeah. You love animals. You're like, oh, this sounds really nice and relaxing, and they don't talk back.
Yeah. They don't talk back, but they probably show other signs of pleasure and displeasure.
They do. The goats have like this whole unconditional love thing going on. You know, they
rub on you. I mean, Jessie, when she gets off the milking stand, she would turn her head for a hug and a kiss.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't get off the milk stand until she got.
They are quite affectionate animals, and our herd, especially, is because everybody that's on the farm has been bottle fed since birth.
Why bottle fed as opposed to mother fed?
Well, what we have found is the first year that we had some, you know, we started raising goats and was kind of doing this whole trial and error thing. We found that some of the kids were a little weak and couldn't stand right after birth. If they were born outside the barn, the mother tended to go back in to protect herself from the elements. The child, you know, the kid was left outside. So what we ended up doing was just bringing them, you know, back into the barn and milking out the moms, taking the colostrum, you know, filtering it out to make sure it was clean, and then giving it right back to the babies. In nature, it could take an hour or so for the kid to be able to stand up and to nurse and to get the colostrum. At the farm, within 15 to 20 minutes of the kid hitting the ground, they've got their colostrum, they're dried off, they're warm, they're put underneath their heat lamp, and then off we go to the next one.
And kids are born different sizes, so they're different heights, and udders are different lengths, so even if they can stand, they can't always reach the udder, and as they get older, I mean, they're getting teeth, they're actually born with teeth, and they don't typically tear up the teats, but they eventually do, and then you can get some infection in the teats. So it's both to ensure that the kids are well taken care of from birth, and the mother doesn't get an infection, and everybody gets good nutritious colostrum and milk.
Now, did you also come from the corporate world and escape to the land?
Yeah, I had worked for Kinko's for several years. I had several entrepreneur-type jobs. I have a commercial photography degree, and did that in California, tried doing it out here, moved here, opened up the Kinko's on St. Francis, and then I decided, no, this is enough for me. I went to nursing school, graduated in 2000, worked for the VA hospital for almost 10 years, and continued to go to school while we were building the farm to earn my nurse practitioner degree, and we were starting to build the farm. We bred the animals. Michael would go out in the, what, 66 Mustang, and you'd cruise the countryside looking for land with our...
You have a 66 Mustang?
I did. I stress the word did. I sold it for my big Dodge truck that I have because Mustangs don't haul hay very well.
That's true, but they're cool.
I know. It was hard. It was completely restored. It was beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
So now I have a farm truck.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, the two of you making this transition from the urban life, mm-hmm. which, you know, no matter how hard you work, is not nearly as physical in terms of just labor as what you're doing now.
I put in, physically, I work harder than I ever have. The number of hours I put in, this morning I got up at 4. By the time I get done today, I would have made 2 trips into Albuquerque to get farmers market stuff delivered, get the cheese out. And then my night will probably end between 9 and 10 tonight because there's still things I have to do when I get back to the farm. So I'm putting in way more hours. I'm working harder physically, but it's so much more rewarding.
Well, this is the thing that's interesting, too, is that you both come from this point of view that local food by local people, for local people, as healthy as possible. And you're working with the farmers market and also with, what, local restaurants?
We are working with local restaurants. We're very fortunate to be in contact almost right away with the restaurants just by working the farmers market. Wonderful chefs that support local products come and shop at the farmers market and have scouted us out. And we've landed some really nice accounts like Savoy and Zinc,
Seasons.
They're in Albuquerque. They're some of our first accounts, and The Grove. And they've kind of stayed with us through the years. They've helped us work out a plan so that we can have cheese for them all year round because goats stop milking in November or December. So we learned how to preserve that cheese without preservatives. Until it's ready to use. And we are now working with Roland at Joe's Diner, and we've been working with Bishop's Lodge. Chris McLean is an awesome chef, and he is very supportive of local. He's buying 5 or 6 of our cheeses now, our blue cheese, our raw cow milk, smoked Gouda, cheddar curds, mozzarella. And
so you have some cow milk, too.
We do.
Yeah.
So you have cows and goats.
Yes, we have 20 cows of milking.
Yeah. So we've got cow. We did that. I can't hold on to my time frames, but it was last year that we got into the.
Yeah, we had 5 cows come to the farm last year. We tried milking them on the farm, and we weren't set up for it. You know, you can put 8 goats in about 7 feet to milk them, and you need a lot more room to milk a cow. So we set up 1 stanchion to milk a cow, and it took an hour to milk a cow. And so 5 cows took 5 hours, and 60 goats at the time took 2 hours.
Ah.
So and it was basically our setup. We weren't really set up for cows. So what we ended up doing was finding, we have a dairy that we're working with down in the South Valley that took the cows that we acquired, and they milk them for us. And take care of them, and mm-hmm. we go down and we get our milk from the dairy when we need it.
And the cows are living in conditions that you approve of?
Yeah. The guy does a really good job with them. Mm-hmm. And if there's any excess milk that we don't pull off for our use, he gets to use it.
Oh, okay.
And that's just, you know, I'd rather him be able to utilize it than it go down the drain.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of helping him out as well. So
it's a great partnership. We get about 200 gallons of raw milk every week, and we're making 3 to 4 batches of cheese and 50-gallon batches. So the cheddar curds have been a huge success. Yeah. It's taken about a year to really for people to catch on, but it was last week you made 50 pounds and they were gone in 2 days. And it used to take 2 weeks to sell them all.
So you, along with everything else, get a reputation from not only the restaurants, but just the people in the farmers market, mm-hmm. who, if you go every week, you start to sample all the different cheeses in the market, and people get their favorites.
Exactly.
Yeah, we sample almost everything at the market, and sometimes we'll rotate it. We'll pick a few this week, and then the following week we'll change to something else.
We're talking to Ed and Michael Lobos. So You are at the farmer's market. You're also teaching cheese classes.
Yes, we are. That's something we started last year. People were asking, how do you make cheese? You know, with the economy, people are trying to figure out how to make more food at home and save a little money. And we thought, well, why not? Why not support the community? Not everybody can afford to make our cheese. And I think if people learn how to make cheese, they'll appreciate the products that we do provide. So we started on Sundays as our basically the only day of the week that Michael and I are on the farm together, and we have a little more crew. So we pick Sundays to do a nice introductory to cheese making, and we talk about the terms, and we provide a nice lunch of just a variety of cheeses and breads and different vegetables and things from the farmer's market. And I teach people how to make basic cheese because that applies to all the recipes of making cheese. And then we stretch mozzarella. And new next month, we're going to teach how to make butter, yogurt, and ice cream. And we're going to choose a couple different methods to make that so you don't have to buy the machine. And we're going to break people up into groups. And I think it's going to be really fun. I've been playing with these recipes before the class to make sure they work and sharing them with the groups that we've had on the farm.
The classes really are hands-on. You know, they get to touch the curd. They get to see what it's like. Because what we want them to do is have a base level when they leave and they go home and they try to make it. Because, to be honest, Ed had seen cheese made before from his grandparents' experience. I never had. So the first time I saw it coming out, I'm like, is this right or wrong?
Yeah. You know? What's a clean break?
Yes.
Right.
You know, how is this supposed to set? And what does this look like at this certain stage? So you can read a book all you want, but until you see it, you don't understand the steps.
And what's really kind of been exciting in it is seeing the families that have come out. You know, we have like mothers and daughters or husbands and wives. So they make this, you know, it's kind of an event for them to come out for the cheese making. So it's kind of neat to see that, you know.
And you also generate almost all your electricity through wind power.
What we did is we, through our co-op, you can purchase pull down, kind of like the PNM Blue Sky program, where you can pull down your electricity from wind generated electricity. And that was kind of, we couldn't put actual wind generators on the farm just because they're kind of cost prohibitive. I have been working with somebody in the past 6 weeks and looking at some different grants and stuff, but that really hasn't firmed up yet. So right now we're at the going through an alternative that, you know, that would allow us to help support that. One other thing we did to try to reduce our electricity bill was putting in some underground aging facilities. And I got rid of 4 reach-in coolers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the electricity bill went down about $300 to $400.
Wow. Just by putting it in the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what was kind of cool, there was some food shelters that needed these refrigerators. So we did go and donate a few of them, some of our better ones, to this program that was going on, Bienvenidos.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't have to go out and buy new refrigerators. So not only did I get, you know, this experience of aging cheese underground, we were able to help somebody else out by, you know, giving them some of our equipment.
Ed and Michael Lobaugh are with the Old Windmill Dairy in McIntosh, New Mexico. If anybody would like to find out more about them, they can go to theoldwindmilldairy.com. And we will see you at the farmer's market.
All right.
Thanks. See you
Thank
tomorrow.
You.
Good. Thanks for being with us. I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Ken Knight. He is the director of Canticum Novum Chamber Orchestra and Chorus. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So we have had you on many times over the years talking about the 3 different choruses you direct, but now it's down to 1. The men's chorus and the women's chorus are no longer, but you've still got the co-ed.
They still exist, but I have retired as their director, and they have replaced me with, highly qualified candidates.
Excellent. So you have a concert coming up this weekend, tomorrow and Sunday, Saturday and Sunday, the 15th and 16th of October.
Right.
And in Santa Fe and in Albuquerque. And this is a kind of interesting concept. It's you're presenting unjustly neglected masterpieces.
We always present unjustly neglected masterpieces. That's kind of our mission. We do repertoire that is fabulous but rarely done. We tend to avoid the standard brand name pieces like Beethoven symphonies and that kind of thing. Once we did the Fauré Requiem, only because most of my singers had never sung it and wanted to.
Right.
But we tend to do pieces that aren't done. And they're wonderful pieces. On this program, we have a Bach cantata, one of his very early cantatas from his Mühlhausen period. We're doing a piece for women by Felix Mendelssohn, a piece for men by Pietro Ion, who was at one time director of music and principal organist at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York. We're doing a suite for string orchestra by C.H.H. Parry, Hubert to his friends, called Lady Radnor's Suite, named after his good friend, Lady Radnor. And we're doing a beautiful short prelude by Gerald Finzi. It was intended to be a movement of a larger work, but it was never completed, and it was sort of extracted from the unfinished work after his death. And the real cornerstone of the program is the Concerto for Organ and Orchestra by Francis Poulenc.
And you've got a particular organ that will be played.
We have, well, two. We're doing one performance here in Santa Fe at First Presbyterian Church. They have a fairly new mechanical action, what they call a tracker action, a Fisk brand organ that was just installed 4 or 5 years ago. Quite a hefty instrument.
And oddly enough, when I was in high school, I toured the Fisk Organ Factory in Massachusetts because my friend's mother had married into that family or something like that, and it was awesome to see how these things are built.
I mean,
it's a work of art and craft that's centuries old.
It is. And, of course, before everything was electrified, before electricity was widely available, all pipe organs were mechanical action. So all of the great organs of the 18th century in Europe, those Zilbermann organs and all those wonderful things that Bach himself played on, were mechanical action organs. And then, of course, the bellows had to be turned by hand. He had to have an assistant, usually a kid, one of his 20 children probably, who sat down there probably reading a book and cranking the organ to provide wind for the pipes.
So Saturday Saturday is at the First Presbyterian Church on mm-hmm. Grand Avenue in Santa Fe, and then Sunday is at St. John's Episcopal Cathedral in Albuquerque.
Right.
And Oliver Prezant will present a lecture before each concert.
A pre-concert lecture, right. He'll talk for about 45 minutes about the music, and he's very entertaining and very informative, and everyone loves his lectures.
Yeah.
The organ in Albuquerque, by the way, is probably the best pipe organ in the state. It's a sensational instrument. It's just magnificent, and the acoustics at the cathedral down there are also magnificent, and they sometimes say that the most important stop on a pipe organ is the room in which it's installed.
Right.
And so having great acoustics is a great blessing for this particular organ. And we have a fabulous organist, Maxine Thévenot, who's the director of music and choir master at the cathedral, is playing both performances. The organs are very different. And I heard her practicing at First Pres yesterday, and she made the comment that playing this concerto on the organ at First Presbyterian was a bit like trying to play the Brahms violin concerto on a viola da gamba, which is a 16th, 17th century instrument.
Right.
It requires a completely different set of instructions for the instrument.
I suppose that's one of the things, if you are an organist, it's not like being a flute player where you carry the little thing around, you choose which one you want, and that's it.
You have to go to the organ. Yeah.
So you're down to one choir.
Mm-hmm.
Are you focusing really hard on that choir? Are you kind of taking it easy in your life a little bit too?
I have a little more free time than I had before. But the truth is, this choir that I've retained has always been 10 times as much work as the other two put together.
Why is that?
Because it has a symphony orchestra associated with it.
Ah.
And hiring the players is an intensive, time-consuming project. Obtaining all of the music from publishers and the more modern pieces, you have to rent the scores. You can't actually purchase them. And then sending out all the parts by mail to all the players who live in several different cities in northern New Mexico.
Right.
And
then getting them all together for rehearsal.
Well, I have separate choral rehearsals for the choir to teach them the music. And they're all very smart and motivated and well-trained. They learn music really quickly, and they also learn the music before they come to the first rehearsal, which is a great blessing. But I rehearse the chorus separately, and then I have one rehearsal with the orchestra alone. Then we have two rehearsals with the orchestra and chorus and soloists all together. And it involves all sorts of other chores, like moving choral risers. This time we had to move the timpanis to two different locations for, you know, one venue in Santa Fe, one in Albuquerque. The temps have to be schlepped in a trailer behind a pickup truck down there and back.
These are things that we, the audience, never think of, is how much work it is to move the timpani.
That's right. But it's an enormous task, and I end up, for some reason, I have always ended up writing the program notes for the program and typing it up myself and taking it to the printer and just all sorts of chores like that. And then, of course, we have to raise the money to pay the orchestra.
Right.
And that's almost a full-time job. So luckily, I have a really industrious, dedicated board of directors who helps me with all of these tasks.
Canticum Novum Chamber Orchestra and Chorus. Their 8th season fall concerts are this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, the 15th and 16th of October, 7:30 at First Presbyterian Church in Santa Fe on Saturday, and then 4 in the afternoon at St. John's Episcopal Cathedral in Albuquerque. Thank you very much, Ken Knight, for being with us.
Thank you.
I'd like now to welcome to the program Rob DeWalt. He is with the Pasatiempo, which is the Friday Arts supplement, Friday Arts magazine in the Santa Fe, New Mexico. He's with us every Friday, speaking of the arts. Welcome.
Morning.
Hello.
Good morning. Oh, that's better.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Curtis Ullman is here. He is the artistic director of Arcos Dance Company, and you just had your opening performance last night.
We did. We did.
So what is Arcos all about?
Arcos is Santa Fe's newest contemporary dance company. I have 21 dance members, and it is designed to create performance opportunities for Santa Fe dancers.
And so these are dancers who are what, maybe fresh out of their training?
I have some that are still training scholastically. I have dancers that are just out of college, and professional dancers as well.
And so it seems like I wasn't able to go last night, but it seems like a youthful and highly energetic young company.
It is. It is. The pieces are pretty fast-paced. That's what I like to do. Six pieces, mostly group pieces. I like to work with large groups, fill the space. So it's a real high-energy show.
You're doing all kinds of different choreography. One of them is set to The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, and that's like the music, quote-unquote.
It is. It is. I wanted to go with something a little bit different with this show. So I've always really liked that poem, and this one's read by Basil Rathbone, which is really amazing.
Amazing.
And so I wanted to create something a little bit more challenging using just spoken word rather than music.
And are you doing the choreography on all the pieces?
Actually, Erica Gianfrido and myself choreographed for most of the pieces collectively. There are two pieces that I set myself and one that she set herself.
Are you dancing?
I'm not. I'm not. I'm just choreographing and directing.
Yeah. Are you, I mean, you're a dancer. Are you kind of hanging that up?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more interested in just choreographing now, so I've stopped dancing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's great. It's great. Yeah. I like to be behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where and when are the performances? Is this weekend and next weekend?
This weekend and next weekend, Friday, Saturday this week, 7:30 at the Moving People Space, 1583 Pacheco Street. Next weekend, same time, 7:30 and Friday and Saturday.
And the public is welcome to check out this new dance company. What are your hopes? Do you want to keep this going for many years? Is it a kind of stepping stone for people to go into other companies?
Well, I'd like to eventually create a professional group out of this that travels towards the country and the world, hopefully. So possibly dividing into a young program for kids who want to continue to train and perform, and then if they want to move on to dance professionally, they can move into the next group.
Curtis Ullman is the artistic director of Arcos Dance Company, and we will see you over at the Moving People Dance Space on Pacheco Street here in Santa Fe. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Rob DeWalt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I was getting hungry on the way over here listening to the fellas from Old Windmill Dairy.
I know.
And I was like visions of, I don't know, cheese plums dancing in my head.
I know. It sounds so good. I can't wait to try their cheese.
They are. You know, it's a bummer living with someone. You know, my partner Jason doesn't like goat cheese at all.
Oh, really?
So it's a bummer.
They have some cow cheese.
I know. That's what I told them. I said, you know, now, you know, they have cow cheese now, so you can't cheese block me every time I go to the farmer's market. Speaking of the farmer's market, I was there.
Speaking of cheese blocking.
I was there yesterday afternoon for a cooking competition, which was really, really fun. It was me and Rocky Durham and Matt Uhalem judged this Cook with the Chef competition. You know, they do these Cook with the Chef things throughout the year, and this was kind of like their big finale. So, like, Chef George Gundry from Atrisco Cafe and Chef Patrick Lambert from the Cowgirl were in competition, and they were trying to create an appetizer using green chilies and yak meat. And a secret ingredient that we got to pick, which was collard greens. And everything was really good. Everything was really good, and it was well attended.
Yak meat and collard greens,
yeah.
You can't go wrong.
The depressing thing was that I think it was one of the last, or the last, Thursday farmers markets of the season. And there weren't that many farmers market shoppers there. And Matt Romero had so much awesome stuff there.
That's one of the reasons we wanted to talk to the guys from the Old Windmill Dairy, because there are a lot of people that are there all year round, and frankly,
absolutely,
the people who are setting up their greenhouses and hoop houses and whatever they're called to grow greens,
mm-hmm,
all year round.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, the greens you get, especially the arugula, it tastes so much better when it's grown in the farmer's market than the arugula that you buy at other locations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a cold frame at the
traveled.
House now, and we grow greens year-round. Just because it's cold enough, we can regulate the temperature a little bit more and a little bit more cheaply in the wintertime. So we grow greens and radishes and things whenever we can, really. When it was 31 degrees below zero out there in Pecos last winter, we were eating lettuce out of the garden, so... the farmer's market is year-round, and there's tons of vendors selling all kinds of delicious, yummy stuff. So you should go and check out the farmer's markets, even
excellent.
In the winter.
Ladies and gentlemen, keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So what's going on?
All kinds of great stuff is going on. We've got it's like drum roll, please. We have the beginning of both the Santa Fe Film Festival and the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival.
And I am devoting not all but most of next week to that.
I want to, you know, hopefully, hint, hint, wink, wink, you know, the powers that be will drop off some passes to the newspaper so that we can catch as many films and do post-festival coverage as well.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, but it's great. The programs are very different, and they come from sort of a different perspective. Of course, the Santa Fe Film Festival is kind of reborn, as it were, with Brent Cleaver's back and
yes, the amazing Brent Cleaver,
the amazing, incredible,
is more passionate about films than almost anybody west mm-hmm. of the Mississippi.
I know. What I would like to do is get Brent Cleaver, and then get Jacques Peisner and David Moore of the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival,
right,
and take them out for beers. And just let them go nuts.
Get a few beers into them and listen to what they say.
Let them talk about film all night long.
You know, I have to, let's just clarify something right here, right now. And that is, the Santa Fe Film Festival and the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival are two completely different entities. They are not related.
Right.
People are getting them mixed up. They're happening at the same time, but they're happening in two different places. So if it's Warehouse 21, it's the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. And if it's the screen in the CCA, it's Santa Fe Film Festival.
Yeah.
And they're both terrific.
Yeah. I mean, the Independent Film Festival is kind of all over the map in terms of their venues, because you know, they get a lot of support from Warehouse 21, so there's a lot of films being screened there, and they're doing a screening or two at the Lensic, and they're doing some at the Center for Peace and Justice.
Oh, okay.
So they're all over the map. There, you can go to, the screenings start this Wednesday with a free, that's no money involved, screenings of New Mexico-made shorts and the 1951 shot in New Mexico film Ace in the Hole, starring Mr. Kirk Douglas.
Ah.
And that is going to be at the Santa Fe History Museum at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, October 19th. Space, obviously, is limited for this. But if you go to Santa Fe IndependentFilmFestival.com, you can find a schedule. You can figure out where the parties are, get ticket information. And then next week, which is sort of like the weekend of the Independent Film Festival and Santa Fe Film Festival, there will be coverage of both.
And
in
I
the
have to
tempo.
Say, I screened three movies last night at home, and one of them is a film called Capsulas, which means capsules, and it's a film made by Guatemala's only woman director, and it's a narrative film, feature length, about some families and, you know, how drugs get into their lives and money and family dramas and things like that. And it's a very low budget film. It is surprisingly good. I was very impressed, and I'm going to try to interview her next week.
Sweet.
From Guatemala City.
I should mention that the opening night for the Santa Fe Film Festival is Thursday, October 20th, and it features two titles, The Artist, a silent black and white movie about a silent film actor, which is supposed to be incredible.
I hear it's great.
And that's at 7 p.m. at the Screen over there at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. And then that festival goes, of course, through the 23rd of October, just like the Independent Film Festival. Go to santafefilmfestival.com. You can find schedule and ticket information. And like I said, on the 21st, we will have major coverage of the weekend events for both film festivals.
Now, I would also like to say that for those who are thinking, oh, maybe I'll go this year, you know what? Santa Fe Film Festival, go.
Yeah.
Go this year. Go to a lot of films. They need, first of all, they're doing a very good job. They've come back from almost, what would you call
it? The brink.
The brink. And so that part is great. You know, coming back from the brink is always good, usually good. But they need the support. And so you will help next year's film festival and this year's film festival by showing up, and you won't be sorry, because these are every film I've seen so far is good.
Yeah.
There's another one called Karis's Peace, about a woman who was an actress, and she lost her short-term memory. And did you ever see that really cheesy Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler movie called 50 First Dates?
Yes.
The girl has brain damage, mm-hmm. and she meets this guy, and she likes him, and they like each other, and the next day she doesn't remember who he is.
Yeah.
This is a real-life example of that. She has a brain tumor, and after the operation, she can remember her entire past, but nothing. She can't retain information.
She can't recycle recent thoughts.
Yeah, so if she meets you, she'll meet you 10 minutes later, and she doesn't know who you are.
Oh, wow.
But she'll know everybody from her childhood or from her student days or from her acting days. It's a very moving documentary.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I should go see that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so two film festivals.
Go to their websites, find out all the information you can about them.
Go to both of them.
Go to both of them. Honestly, film festivals, as far as I'm concerned, are a dime a dozen from a national perspective. But we're lucky to have film festivals of this caliber and of this quality in Santa Fe. So.
And if you're from out of town, come and stay over at one of our many fine hotels, walk in the aspen trees,
yes,
and go to films.
Dine in our restaurants and shop at our farmers markets.
It's true.
Yeah. But there is other stuff going on in Santa Fe besides the film festivals. Tons of gallery openings this week and this weekend. Well, not tons. Let's not get crazy. It's not Indian Market, for goodness sakes. But there are some things to see. Ventana Fine Art is having a show called Glorious Light, Oil and Plain Air Paintings by Barry McEwen. And there's a reception from 5 to 7 p.m. tonight. And that's up through October 25th, so get on it. Darnell Fine Art over there on Canyon Road, The Journey, work by Rudy Gonzalez and Brenda Zapatel. and there's a reception from 5 to 7 p.m. Tonight, and that's up through October. Throughout the week, there are different openings. There's the Canyon Road Paint-Out, speaking of Canyon Road. More than 150 artists working along Canyon Road. So they'll be sort of doing the plein air thing, weather permitting, they'll be outside anyway. And there's 36 galleries are participating. It's 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It lasts all day, basically. So if you just run up and down Canyon Road Saturday, and probably Sunday too, it's gonna be a paint out. It's gonna be nuts. Yeah, total paint out. And
how about Luther Fest?
Luther Fest. I don't know anything about Luther Fest.
Luther Fest tomorrow.
Is that Luther Campbell from Two Live Crew?
No, it's Martin Luther.
Oh.
The guy who put the proclamations on the church door and all that stuff. But it's from 9 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. Come eat, dance, shop, win. And so there's a Scandinavian dance troupe, Norwegian pastries, a bake sale, silent auctions, a pumpkin smashing contest.
You had me at pumpkin smashing.
German.
Or
German style lunch with bratwurst, kosher hot dogs, sauerkraut, and applesauce, homemade by Lutherans.
Oh my goodness.
And this is all happening at the Christ Lutheran Church at the Triangle of Old Pecos Trail, St. Michael's Drive, and Arroyo Chamiso. For more information, 690-9609.
That sounds like fun.
It does. The food sounds really good.
It does.
I love sauerkraut.
Norwegian pastries?
Who
with
knew?
With a side of sauerkraut? No,
I'm
all about the food there.
And they have
there.
A flea market? No. Dude, anyway.
I mean, there's not many places where you can go and get away with smashing pumpkins, so this is awesome. Do you have pumpkins yet? Do you do
no.
the pumpkin thing?
I used to. I still should.
You should.
I haven't done it for a while.
You should.
Yes.
You don't have to get all fancy. You don't have these little kits now.
Have you ever seen some of those pumpkins that people decorate and they're like incredible works of art?
Yeah, I used to do that like 5 or 6 years ago. And then it just, I don't know, it lost its appeal. Because then I have these little templates that you can put on you tape to the pumpkin, and there's a little, like, a pointed thing where you can dot. And it's kind of like, it's fun for kids, but, you know, for adults, I think it's kind of cheating. You know?
Yeah, you just got to take a jackknife.
Get a bottle of gin and a butcher knife and just go nuts.
You heard it here first, ladies
right.
and gentlemen. How to carve
right.
a pumpkin.
There should be a disclaimer with that.
Yeah.
KSFR.
We do not.
Does neither condone nor condemn the use of butcher knives and gin in the carving of pumpkins.
And especially if you're going to do that, do it at home. Don't drink and drive.
That's right.
There you go.
Or drink and carve, really. It's probably a good idea.
Yeah,
too.
Be careful of your fingers
yeah.
when you've had the gin.
You know what I have an obsession with besides pumpkins, apparently, is maps.
I like maps, too.
Maps of all kinds. I mean, I don't belong to AAA because I'll just go in there and clear the map racks. You know, you can go in there and you can get
yeah.
maps for all the tours.
Do they still have maps?
I don't know. My partner belongs to AAA, so he...
I haven't been over there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, every time we take a trip to Durango or Seattle or something, we get maps.
Yeah, because so many people have navigation now. Have you ever noticed nobody has a wristwatch anymore either? They just look at their cell phones. Oh, you do.
I do.
I take it all back. It's a Mickey Mouse wristwatch with those little
uh-huh.
fingers pointing at the...
Yeah, I've got a whole box of Mickey Mouse watches at home.
That's...
I don't even look at my what they call a phone, which does everything except really take or make really good calls. I never look at it for the time. Anyway.
I thought you were going to say make really good coffee.
No.
Doesn't
That'd be
do that
cool,
either.
Though.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
You know what I saw? Somebody sent me a link. Check this out. Google. Oh, no. Go on YouTube and search for Walt Disney's Salvador Dali. And they have one collaboration.
Yes.
It's that 6-minute video. It is crazy.
Yeah. Or Google Jackie Gleason's Salvador Dali. There's one for you.
No.
Yeah. He designed one of Jackie's album covers. Back in the day.
Cool.
Yeah. Back to maps. So I think the obsession started with Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm not sure. There's a scene in there where there's a map, and they're looking for some kind of, I don't know, it's the Ark of the Covenant or something like that. And I just became obsessed, and I had to stop buying maps, and have since gotten rid of a lot. But there's this great lecture by Barbara E. Mundi called Mapping the World for the Spanish Kings, the 16th Century Project of the Relaciones Geográficas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 18th at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium. And some of the maps in this story in Pasatiempo today by Christian de Villela are amazing. I mean, one of these maps is like, it looks like a city map, but it's actually Jesus Christ is a map. It's very strange. You have to see it.
Yeah, you have to see it.
That is, there's no charge for this. And that again is at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, October the 18th at the New Mexico History Museum Auditorium.
New Mexico History Museum is doing lots of deeply awesome things.
They're doing lots of deeply awesome things. Here's my wish though.
What?
Do deeply awesome things with the cafe upstairs. That's something, I'm just going to leave it at that.
All right.
Okay.
The ears of the public are open, including the administration of the New Mexico History Museum, which is also doing, a presentation called The Plazas of New Mexico on Sunday, I believe, at 2 in the afternoon.
Yes.
And we had an interview on that. That book is deep. That book is so good.
It is deep. And there's a great story. So basically almost a photo essay by Paul Weideman in today's Pasatiempo on page 25. And what is that? That's Plazas of New Mexico. That's on 2 p.m. Sunday, October 16th.
Right.
And it's by museum admission, but it's free to New Mexico residents on Sundays. So
yeah.
If you have a New Mexico ID and you're interested in the sort of history of the plaza,
it's
not our plaza necessarily, but plazas in general.
Yeah, well, our plaza included, and I'm sure because they're doing it in Santa Fe, they'll focus to some extent on Santa Fe on Sunday in the photographs they show. But there's new photographs by Miguel Gandert and historic photographs, and there's a kind of way that they blend into each other, and you feel like you're. Whoa. You feel like you're just part of this long, millennia-long history that is New Mexico. Because, of course, the Pueblo Indians had plazas, too, of their own kind.
Mm-hmm.
Monday, October 17th at Collected Works Bookstore, Lisa Tucker's The Winters in Bloom. Tucker examines the joys and challenges of modern parenthood. It's a tale of a child's kidnapping that makes two parents examine their obsessive, worrying behavior. And then Thursday, on the 20th of October at 6 o'clock, Muse Times 2 Poetry Series presents Michael Dickman and Layli Long Soldier. Michael Dickman presents an uncompromising vision of joy and devastating loss in Flies, his second collection, and Layli Long Soldier is Noglala Lakota. Her family is from Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and northwestern Idaho, and she has a book called Chromosomori.
Chromosomori.
Yeah.
Huh.
I'm saying that right. Collected Works Bookstore is at Water Street and Galisteo. And it's a terrific place.
It is. I go there sometimes on my lunch break, and I end up being there way too long.
Ah, working downtown is nice.
Yeah. Well, it is, except I don't get any work done if I go there because
I'm,
you know, too involved in the books. Here's something cool, and this is actually tonight. At, where is this? Oh, this is at El Museo Cultural de Santa Fe, over there in the rail yard. And Joe West and his longtime band, the Santa Fe Review, and the Barrel Cactus String Quartet are going to present a family-friendly evening of music and dancing. And, you know, Joe is kind of, for this show, he's sort of inspired by traveling Wild West shows and carnivals.
Yeah.
But he's also inspired by, and I think that he's kind of one of these people, too, whether he's singing about North Dakota, I believe it's North Dakota where he's from, or sort of Santa Fe, where he has this ability to interpret his own place through his music, whether it be this weird arts community that we live in that's very strange, but also very prolific. So anyway, he's got all these people that he's gathering together, and there's going to be kids singing, there's going to be costumes, please dress up. And it's
please dress up.
Yes, please dress up. Well, they're gonna dress up.
I mean, like costume.
Well, yeah, it's
Halloween.
It's
dress
getting
up
close to how you want to test drive your Halloween costume before you go out. I mean, don't you?
I went as a zombie last year.
You went as now. How'd that turn out?
I ran into a friend of mine who was so disgusted that he wouldn't talk to me.
Oh.
I guess it worked out pretty well.
You know, I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be trying to dress like Steve Jobs this year. Like, they're just going to get a black turtleneck. You know, they used to used to put on a black turtleneck and say, oh, I'm a Calvin Klein ad. And now they have another excuse to be lazy. They're just going to shave their head and get a pair of glasses and go as Steve Jobs. So at least be creative. Put a sock in your mouth and tell people you're a puppy. You know?
And shake it around. Shake
your
head.
Around.
Yeah,
that's exactly.
That's a good idea.
And don't pee on the carpet. Okay, so anyway, there are tickets for this
because
available.
Because otherwise somebody will spank you.
Yes. Oh, dear. Oh, my. Tickets for the Joe West Show, which is tonight at 8 p.m. Friday, October 14th at the El Museo Cultural de Santa Fe, are available at the Lensic box office, 988-1234.
And today is the birthday of the American poet E.E. Cummings. Next year is the 50th anniversary of his death. Two local artists, Miles Merritt and Gail Kempler, have made a wall calendar featuring his poem, I Am a Little Church. And it's got churches from all around the world, including four New Mexico churches. And so this is a basically a 2012 calendar, but E.E. Cummings, and since today's it was his birthday, we're telling you about it. And you can get the calendar at our local bookstores.
Sweet.
And I think on Amazon, too.
Hey, if you're ready for a road trip, the 24th annual Galisteo Studio Tour is this weekend from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. And let's see, more than 30 artists are going to be opening their home studios to the public. It's a sort of a compact tour, and most stops are within walking distance of one another, so you're not going to be wasting a lot of gas schlepping from studio to studio. It's about 20 minutes drive north on Interstate 25. If you want more information, you can go to, you can call 466-2121. But if you just go out to Galisteo from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday and just start looking for signs. Or you could go to GalisteoStudioTour.com and get a list of artists and a map and see examples of the work. And, of course, this is a self-guided tour, so, you know, bring your map.
There won't be somebody saying, now on your right.
That's right.
Notice.
Right. There's no Garmin for the Galisteo Studio Tour.
The puppy statue with the metal sock in its mouth. Juan Gonzalez, co-host of Democracy Now!, is going to be here in Santa Fe on Tuesday, the 25th of October at the Armory for the Arts. There will be a talk and a book signing. I will be introducing Juan Gonzalez. It's at the Armory for the Arts at 7:30, and he has written this amazing book, and I'm going to be airing an interview about that the day before, called News for All the People, The Epic Story of Race and the American Media. And this book, I swear to everybody should read it, because it's kind of like a people's history of the media, so it has all of these Native American, Indian, Black, Latino, publishers, authors, writers, newspaper founders, and things like that who nobody's ever heard of. And it's all there, and the way that race was depicted in the media, and it's kind of like a history of the United States through the lens of the media. It's so well written. It's riveting. And so Juan Gonzalez is going to be talking about that, and it's a KSFR event. So
oh, cool.
Put that on your calendar, Tuesday the 25th of October.
October 25. Mark your calendars. What else? Oh, it's the beginning on Saturday, the 15th, of the Santa Fe Public Schools Music Fest. And these guys are going to be going all over the place. They're going to be on the plaza on Saturday from 10 a.m. to noon. Tons of performances. If you go to sfpmusicfest.org, you can get more info. This event sort of runs through October 30th at various locations.
And just quickly, today through Sunday, the Santa Fe Community College is doing the Carbon Economy Series on soil. Living soil is where it's at. Lots of people are talking about healthy soil and soil biology and all kinds of things. You can go for more information to carboneconomyseries.com. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I'm sorry we didn't get to. There's so many announcements this week.
I know. Go see October, the movie.
Oh, okay. Fiesta Fela, Celebration of African Culture in Santa Fe. That's tomorrow from 10:30 to 5:30 at El Museo. Did you say that one already?
Which?
Fela, African Cultural
Explosion. No,
that's at El Museo Cultural. So much more. And check out the Pasatiempo. Rob DeWalt is with the Pasatiempo Friday Arts Magazine, the Santa Fe New Mexican. He's with us every Friday speaking of the arts. Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name's Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. And I've been taking pictures of people who come into the cafe, and I've been putting them up on the website. It's taken me years to figure out that I can put pictures of people on my website and besides just the audio. So if you want to see who you've been listening to, check out santafe.radiocafe.org. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Lots of Facebooking these days. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. Bye.
Bye.